irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to welcome you to the post-diet revolution. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health all without ever going on another diet. If you want to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I'd love to hear what's on your mind, because remember, it's not what you're eating that's the real problem. It's what's eating at you. It's what's weighing on you. And when we identify and process what lies beneath, your relationship to food totally changes for good. So last week, I spent a few days in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And let me tell you, coming from LA, it was like landing on a different planet. Everything from the architecture, lots of adobes, lots of Pueblo-looking brown, I don't know how to describe them, Pueblo-looking things, like they were made out of rocks or something. Everything from the architecture to the pace of life, let's just say it's a lot slower in Santa Fe, everything was completely different. And I learned some stuff, like, did you know that Santa Fe is the oldest capital city in the United States? I did not know that, but now I do, and so do you. Okay, so why am I telling you about my vacation? Because being away for a mere 4 days, I was reminded of the importance of balance when it comes to self-care. All work and no play leads to burnout, and burnout is bad. Bad. Burnout is bad. When you don't have enough fun in your life, you might be overly reliant on food as your main source of fun. If you were listening a couple weeks ago, one of our callers, Aria, had this issue. You might remember that she couldn't understand her compulsion to eat chocolate. And the more we talked, the clearer it seemed that her only pleasure in life was chocolate. Now, chocolate is a reliable pleasure. It is available. It's predictable. It's always the same. You can always get it. It doesn't change. Unlike people in certain situations in the world. So if your main source of enjoyment in life is eating, then it's hard to give up chocolate or whatever your guilty pleasure may be. But if you are enjoying your life, whatever that means to you, for some, it means connecting with other people. For others, it means doing something meaningful and enjoyable. If you're enjoying your life, then you're less dependent on eating for enjoyment. So the other thing about Santa Fe is they have a vibrant food and foodie scene. There are some amazing restaurants there. If you restrict yourself from enjoying what Santa Fe or wherever you are has to offer, it becomes an experience of deprivation. And when you say, oh, I can't have that, it usually only makes you want something more. If you tell yourself you can't have cheese, you can't have dessert, you can't have, well, you know, you name it, whatever it is, you're going to feel deprived, which just leads to binging or overeating later. I cannot tell you how many of my patients have told me that they went out to eat at a restaurant with friends, whatever, and they did not have what they wanted. They used willpower to be good, only to go home and eat 5 bowls of cereal or a carton of ice cream or eat the fridge or whatever's in the pantry, because deprivation leads to binging, whether it's the actual deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation. If they just had what they wanted, they wouldn't have felt deprived, and they probably would not have binged later. Now, speaking of going out, on our last night in Santa Fe, we went to a restaurant called Sazon. And it was remarkable for both its food and the art displayed on the walls. I felt as if I was dining in an art gallery. Portraits of Frida Kahlo were everywhere. Now, Frida Kahlo was a remarkable woman, a survivor of so many challenges in her life. And she famously said, "At the end of the day, we can endure much more than we think we can." She was true to herself, married to one of the most famous artists of her day, Diego Rivera, openly bisexual in a time when that was very much frowned upon. She wore whatever the heck she wanted, despite the conventions of the time. And then there's her famous unibrow. Basically, she was confident and unconventional and fierce. She was a 20th century badass woman, and the paintings in the restaurant depict her beauty and her fierceness. And if you want to see what I mean, check out my Instagram at Win the Diet War. So why am I telling you about Frida Kahlo? Because she was a survivor. She went through a lot of misery and hardship. And sometimes when we hear stories of survival, it inspires us and helps us remember that whatever we're going through, we can survive it. And better yet, we can grow from it. We can learn from it. You know that expression, grow through what you go through? She's a living example of that. When you're your own champion, when you believe in yourself, you can be your own cheerleader. You have confidence in yourself. You have faith in yourself. And when you have that, you can comfort yourself, acknowledge yourself, be there for and with yourself with language instead of action like eating. So I thought I'd give you some lessons about Frida Kahlo to help you create that kind of confidence and spirit in yourself. And these Frida lessons are courtesy of Elite Daily from an article called 6 Ways Frida Kahlo Was Truly a Badass Ahead of Her Time. I'm going to share a few of them. So the first Frida lesson is resilience. At the age of 18, Frida Kahlo was in a horrific bus accident, and it caused so much irreparable damage to her body that her doctors thought she was going to die on the operating table. The accident broke her spine, her collarbone, her pelvis, her foot, and her ribs. An iron railing pierced her stomach. The accident left her with unthinkable injuries, scars, and disabilities, but it did not kill her. And this was in 1925, when medical technology was nowhere near what it is today. So it took 2 years for Frida to recover from this accident. She vowed to walk again, and she did. She also vowed to never again be a financial burden on her family. She wanted to support herself. And the accident, ironically, is the thing that led her to her painting career. And through her art, Frida survived. So I want you to think about something you've survived. Maybe it's not as catastrophic or physical as a horrible bus accident, but there's probably something in your past that you've survived, that you've overcome. Maybe you didn't think you could at the time, but you did. So take a moment, recognize your spirit and your ability to get through tough times, and appreciate what those times have taught you about yourself. So often we focus on what we don't like about ourselves, and whether it's weight or where we are in life or what have you, and we forget to recognize what we appreciate about ourselves, what we like about ourselves. And when you look, you will find what you're looking for. If you look for ways in which you can appreciate yourself, you will find ways to appreciate yourself. So switch your focus and start thinking about that. The second Frida lesson is about breaking stereotypes. Now, Frida was well known for her style, and her style was definitely, shall we say, unique. She experimented with men's clothes and hairstyles, and then there's her famous unibrow, and the mustache she sometimes either grew in herself or pasted on. She chose to reject contemporary ideas of beauty and conformity. And that's why she grew a mustache and a unibrow. Maybe as a way of protesting the ideals of beauty of her time. This was the 20s, the 30s, 40s. Maybe it was a form of self-expression. Maybe she just wanted to stand out and get attention. Maybe all of the above. Whatever her intention was, she pushed against social and cultural boundaries. She broke the mold. So she's an inspiration for those who want to break down walls, who want to live their lives regardless of what other people will say or think. So let's take a moment. Think about what you would do if you didn't care what other people thought of you. Imagine that. What would change in your life? What would be different? What if, for example, your weight was your business alone? You didn't care what anybody thought about your weight, and you just were out there living your life. What would occupy your time, your thoughts, your mind? What would you be doing differently? If you have any thoughts about that and you'd like to share, I would love to hear from you. 818-602-4929 is the number here in the studio, so give me a call. Okay, the next Frida lesson, love. Frida was married to the famous artist Diego Rivera, and although he was a pathological cheater, including having an affair with Frida's own sister, oh my gosh, she forgave him. And she forgave her sister. Plus, Frida herself had countless affairs of her own, including with women. She reportedly slept with Josephine Baker and Georgia O'Keeffe. She had good taste in women. And Diego forgave her. She and Diego loved each other so much they could never part for long. Frida adored Diego. She loved him ever since she first laid eyes on him when she was a schoolgirl. He was commissioned to paint a mural at her school, and that's when they met. And their love story was quite a beautiful one, aside from all the affairs. Diego was a mentor to her. They were best friends. He was her equal. Really, quite a love story. So what if you loved yourself with the same kind of fierceness that Frida and Diego loved each other? What if you forgave yourself for not being perfect? What if you focus more on your strengths than your perceived deficits? How would that feel? Imagine living in that world where you felt good about yourself. There was self-love instead of self-abandonment. You didn't care what other people thought of you. And you were just your own authentic, genuine self. Sounds good, doesn't it? So I hope that by learning about Frida Kahlo, you're going to start challenging the ideas and conventions that you believe about yourself so you can create a more authentic relationship to yourself, more acceptance, more compassion, less self-hatred, less picking on yourself, less focusing on the scale as the thing that measures your value. Guess what? The scale cannot measure your value. And we don't want to let a piece of metal and plastic have that much power over your life, right? So when you break free of that, you will be surprised how much things with food also change. Okay, so I want to switch gears now and finish answering the question from a couple of weeks ago. Rochelle wrote in, she wanted to know what she could actually do to stop sabotaging herself when it came to weight loss. So I talked about the 7 thoughts that sabotage your weight loss goals. And today I want to share the 10 quote unquote healthy things you're doing that actually sabotage your weight loss, and also what to do differently. It's from an article from a site called Eat This, Not That. And the writer of the article is Jennifer Hussein. So she says, Hey, you've been dieting and exercising like crazy, yet that pesky number on your scale still won't go down, even if you're doing all the right things, choosing healthy snacks, cutting out sugar, slashing calories. Well, guess what? You might be doing it all wrong. You may not realize it, but some everyday food and exercise habits could be seriously sabotaging your weight loss efforts. So here's the first so-called healthy habit that's actually not healthy, and that is going sugar-free. Just because something says sugar-free on the label does not automatically make it a healthy choice. Many of these products aren't exactly what they claim to be. They contain artificial sweeteners that could actually lead to weight gain. That's right, artificial sweeteners can cause you to gain weight, not lose it. There was a study in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. Canadian American. Where'd that come from? Okay. The Canadian Medical Association Journal reviewed 37 studies, analyzed the habits of nearly 406,000 people, and they discovered that sweeteners such as aspartame, sucralose, and stevia are not effective for weight loss and may in fact be associated with weight gain if consumed regularly. So if you think that Diet Coke or diet anything is helping you lose weight, your body seems to experience it not as zero calories. I won't go into the medical aspect of it. Next week, Dr. Adrienne Udeem is going to be back and we're going to ask her about that. But it is a very well-kept secret of the $60 billion diet industry, which of course does not want you to know this, that artificial sweeteners actually cause weight gain. So you're better off ditching those kind of artificially sweetened beverages completely and sipping on water. Or my personal favorite, sparkling water. The next quote-unquote healthy habit that's not healthy is overeating so-called healthy snacks. Now, moderation plays a huge factor in weight loss, no matter what you're eating. So even if you're eating a protein bar instead of cookies, watching how much you eat is just as important, if not more so, than what you're eating. So although almonds and avocados, for example, are healthy superfoods, they are also very calorie dense. So it's possible to go overboard on your daily calories if you're not sticking to a proper serving size. And if you look at, you know, what a proper serving size for almonds are, it's ridiculously small. I had a patient who could not understand why she wasn't losing weight. And because she's like, I eat nuts instead of crackers like I used to. What's happening? And it turned out she was just eating thousands of calories of nuts without realizing it. Plus, people tend to overdo it on packaged foods that are labeled healthy. This is according to a report in the Journal of the Association for Consumer Research. People associate healthy food with being less filling. So they load up on snacks they think are better for them, which translates again to blowing through their calorie budget for the day. So, you know, just because something's labeled healthy or is healthy, you still have to limit the amount that you have of it. The next healthy habit that's not healthy is cutting out meals. So yes, we need to practice moderation, but you also don't want to limit yourself too much, right? Balance, I guess. Balance is the theme of the day. According to the Calorie Control Council, did you know there was a Calorie Control Council? I actually did not know that. Now I know that, and Albuquerque is not the capital of New Mexico, which I thought it was. Okay. 17% of Americans make the huge mistake of skipping meals to lose weight. cutting out meals can actually cause you to gain weight. That may sound contradictory, but it makes a lot of sense because when you restrict your calories too much, your metabolism starts to slow down and become more efficient. Now, according to registered dietitians, you really shouldn't eat fewer than 1,200 calories a day. And I've also heard that that's too low a number, but no less than 1,200 calories a day, because when you're not getting enough calories, your metabolism slows down, and then you don't have enough energy for workouts, and you're more likely to binge eat. And when you start eating normally again, because your metabolism has slowed, you gain weight more easily. So, don't cut out meals. Okay, here's one that really may surprise you. I know it surprised me. And that is, sipping on bottled water is something that people think is healthy and may not be. So, check this out. Although keeping yourself hydrated is a major key to weight loss, some plastic water bottles are not doing your body any good. So bisphenol A, which commonly is known as BPA, is a harsh toxin found in plastic that has actually been linked to both obesity and fertility issues. A Harvard study showed that adults with the highest concentration of BPA had notably larger waistlines and were more likely to be obese than those with lower BPA content. Isn't that interesting? So, I don't know. Get a glass bottle that's better for the environment and just fill up your water from home. Filtered, of course. The next healthy choice that is probably hurting you is cutting down on all fats. Yes, it is time to kill the myths that all fats are bad for you. Trans fats can do some major damage to your health and your body, but you can't cut out all fats from your diet. Foods like nuts, avocado, and salmon all contain healthy fats that can actually help you in your weight loss journey. So, you know, fats not only help us absorb many of the vitamins from our diets, they also help keep us fuller longer, which of course, when you're fuller longer, that helps your weight loss efforts. So do your body a favor and keep the healthy fats on your plate, in moderation, of course. The next not-so-healthy thing that you think is healthy is living at the gym. Now, making sure you get your exercise is essential to losing weight, but overdoing it is not in your best interest. If you're obsessively working out, you're not giving your body enough time to recover and rebuild. Okay, I'm going to hold that thought because we have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Nicole. I'm calling from Beverly Hills.
Hi, Nicole.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm fine. What's going on?
So, you know, I'm 24 in Beverly Hills, and last night, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but it's trending right now, and Extra did a segment on it last night, but Kim Kardashian is down to 119 pounds, and she was expressing joy at being called anorexic and skinny by her sisters. And I mean, the Kardashian sisters combined have 114 million followers, and I just think that the content is so discouraging, like that anorexic and amazing and skinny and just looking amazing are all used, you know, synonymously. And I just wanted to know, like, what your take is and how you think this affects, you know, young females.
Well, I think it's horrible and unconscionable and thoughtless to make such a statement. Anorexia is a dangerous mental illness, and to express joy at being referred to that way is it's just reprehensible. I think it's reprehensible. But I also think that there's something about Kim Kardashian and the whole Kardashian culture and all of that. And didn't she come to being known because she did a sex video and she's known for having curves, right?
Yeah.
So there, I mean, I think,
I
think there's something very, very deplorable about the idea in our culture right now that we, for girls and women, that we are only what we look like.
Yeah, it's true.
I've
talked. How can we get away from that? Like, you know, they have 114 million followers. Like, it's just all these people are following her and look up to her. And how can we get away from that? How can we work on that?
I think just one person at a time. And it's pervasive in our culture. I've talked about this. I don't know if you've heard me talk about this book before, but there's a book that looks at what young girls used to talk about in their diaries, like, say, in the 1850s through the 1920s. And they all talked about wanting to be good people and wanting to be moral and wanting to do good in the world. And then there was a shift sort of after World War II when they all started writing in their diaries about wanting to be skinny. And so I think that we have to individually empower girls, women, boys, men, to honor that they are more than just how they appear. That's why I wanted to talk about Frida Kahlo today, because she was such a pioneer about that, to be able to say, I'm not going to be defined by how I look or how sexy I am to somebody else, or where do we even get the idea that thinner is better?
Yeah.
And to just have conversations like we're having right now to challenge these notions so that maybe some of those millions of followers can wake up. I know, you know, when my daughter was little, we passed these girls who must have been like 14 years old, but seriously, they look like little hookers, right? I mean, they were just so trashy looking. And my daughter was like, oh, they're so pretty. She was six. Oh, they're so pretty. And I said, honey, okay, yeah, they're pretty, yes, but what do you think they're saying? You know, what's the message that they're saying about themselves? Well, they're saying that they're showing their tummies and they're saying that they're pretty. And I said, what are they saying about the kind of people that they are? Nothing. What do you think is important? She's like, I guess it's okay to be pretty, but you should really be a person who feels good about who you are. Like out of the mouths of babes, right? Six years old. And just
smart cookie.
I led her a little bit, but yeah, she's been hearing that stuff since she was born. So, but it's that idea that we want to have that conversation, and it's not about rejecting the idea of beauty. I mean, it's good to be beautiful. It's lovely to be beautiful, but that doesn't define you, and that doesn't make you special. It makes you beautiful. But who are you? You know, it's like I remember before I met my husband, I was dating a lot of guys, and I would, you know, some guys I would date and they were just like these, I would go out and they were just gorgeous. But then I would spend an hour with them and I'd be like, ugh, you're boring. And they would be much less gorgeous to me. Or I'd go out with a guy who wasn't so classically gorgeous, but he had such a great personality and he was so engaging and vibrant that I'd be like, oh, he's cute. Right. So our views of even what's attractive can be influenced by what's more than skin deep.
Absolutely.
So what's one thing you're going to do, whether it's saying it to yourself or somebody else, to challenge this Kardashian influence?
I don't know. It's hard. I mean, personally, like, I definitely think it's discouraging content, but I just think that, you know, living in Beverly Hills in LA, there's just so much pressure to look a certain way and, you know, weigh a certain amount that, to be honest, if someone told me, like, I look so skinny, I'm like, oh my God, how did you become anorexic? You look amazing. I would also take it as a compliment. And I just feel like, you know, it's maybe I'm sick too, but I really think that, you know, we're influenced by social media and just like society, and it's really hard. So I guess just thinking about like being a good person and what's on the inside, you know, matters. And to just try to focus on, yeah, being lovely and nice and good and figuring out who I am as a person rather than obsessing over, you know, the outer shell and what we look like on the outside.
Exactly.
I don't know. Cause it being aware of that.
Yeah, that's good. Because otherwise you buy into the objectification, you know,
yeah.
Where you just become a thing and not a person.
Yeah.
And you're clearly a thoughtful person who has more on her mind than the number of her genes.
That's right.
Yeah. So I encourage you to have that conversation with yourself and maybe with your friends. Maybe you're part of what creates the change.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. I think it's so important for girls my age, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks for calling, Nicole. Call me back and let me know how you're doing.
I will. Thanks, okay. Dr. Nina.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh. See, there's both regret, like, oh, this Kardashian influence, but then there's hope. I mean, Nicole is a young woman who's thinking about this and wanting to challenge all of the pressure that is coming her way, and living in Beverly Hills living in Southern California is the pressure to conform to some ideal that comes from where is so strong. So good for you, Nicole, for fighting that. Okay, so I was talking about how it is not so healthy to live at the gym. That's right. It is not healthy to live at the gym. So if you are obsessively working out rather than working out moderately, if you're obsessively working out, you're not giving your body enough time to recover and rebuild. Oh, I hope my husband is listening to this because he is in the gym almost every single day. I keep telling him this, but does he listen to me? No, he does not listen. He is obsessively working out. So obsessively working out actually increases your risk of injury, and it causes you to stay out of the gym for a long time to recover from your injury, and that leads to weight gain. So to make sure your body is fully recovered, it's good to take 1 or 2 days off from the gym a week. Your body will thank you for it. David, are you listening? Okay. He could have worse habits than going to the gym every day. So I'm only kind of slightly giving him a hard time. All right. Along the same lines, sticking to the same exercise routine is also not healthy. Working out is important, but doing the same exercises over and over and over again for weeks or months or even years will do nothing for you. If you've been doing the same workout for the past few months, your body isn't being challenged anymore. And that means it's not burning as many calories as it otherwise could. So if you're usually kickboxing, try switching it up to take SoulCycle or something. If you're usually SoulCycling, take kickboxing. Do something different, Pilates, anything. And if you're dedicated to doing yoga, try a more intense class. Just switch it up. Your body will thank you. Okay, here's another one that may also surprise you. Avoiding dessert is not a healthy habit. So moderating your daily sweets is definitely a good thing, but cutting them out completely might put you in the wrong direction for weight loss. Israeli researchers found that eating a sweet treat with breakfast can actually help you lose weight. Yes, that's right. Participants of the study who ate something sweet with their breakfast actually lost more weight and kept off more pounds than those who did not. Now, they don't say what the sweet treat was. I can't imagine that, like, they mean a donut or something, but it would be good to know what more about that study. I'm going to have to check it out. Now, that said, that doesn't mean you should eat two pieces of cake for breakfast. They recommend a piece of dark chocolate. One piece of dark chocolate, that should suffice. Okay. So the next recommendation that people think is healthy, it's not healthy, eating gluten-free when you don't have to. Now, a gluten-free diet is great if you actually cannot digest gluten, like people with celiac disease or other gluten sensitivities. But if your body can handle gluten, sometimes going for the gluten-free label isn't in your best interest. It turns out that many of these gluten-free foods can contain more carbs than the regular foods. That's right. Let me say that again. Crazy, right? Many gluten-free foods contain more carbs than the regular version of those foods. Most gluten-free breads are made from refined grain, with white rice flour being the most popular. And those breads have double the carbs of whole wheat breads. And a study by the American Society for Nutrition has shown that people who eat whole grains have less belly fat than those who eat refined grains. So eating whole grain products instead of gluten-free products can actually be beneficial for your diet. But if you do have a gluten sensitivity, the best kind of gluten-free breads are the ones that are made with seeds and naturally gluten-free whole grains. So interesting, isn't it? Okay, the next so-called healthy thing you think you're doing but isn't healthy is packing on the protein. Oh, hold that thought. We have another caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry. How are you doing this fine Wednesday?
I'm doing well, Larry from Burbank. How are you doing?
Larry from Burbank is doing okay. What you've been reading down that list, the tips are, a couple things really stood out for me, and I'm glad you shared them. The first thing I thought of when you said cutting desserts out completely, even if that really did help, I'll never do that anyway. I know my taste buds, but it brought to mind the whole notion of perfection versus failure. And for me, and I think it's human nature, unless you know you have spectacular level of discipline, that never ends well. So just to scratch the itch a little bit and be okay with that, that's better than perfection versus failure.
Exactly. Because that is dichotomous black and white thinking, and deprivation leads to binging later. So if you say, no, I really want that ice cream, but I can't have it, I must be perfect. Well, then you're going to feel deprived because you didn't have the ice cream, even though you may also feel proud of yourself because you had the willpower. But now you're thinking way too much about freaking ice cream, right? And eventually,
exactly.
You're going to eat ice cream, and the mentality is, oh, you know, I might as well, I've had some ice cream, now I've blown it, so I might as well have the whole carton, kind of thinking. When if you just say, okay, I want ice cream, then you can have a bite of it, a couple bites of it, the whole scoop, whatever, and you'll actually enjoy it and eat less ice cream in the long run.
Yeah, if I do that, you know, just not that often, but just what seems natural rather than force feeding myself. If I deprive myself in that vein, I wind up doing something else to kind of act out, like watching 3 hours of TV while thinking about, you know, a chunky monkey on the brain. And like I said, that doesn't end well. then you mentioned varying up the exercises. I used to do what's called cross training before people knew what that was. But basically, it's exactly what you said. I used to cycle a lot and swim on off days. Now I'm running. The mistake that I make is that's all I do is run, and that's really it's great exercise, but it pounds the body. I got to get back into swimming because that's, you know, weight free, works different parts of the body, and it's just perfect to augment the running. So you have to go with variety, I guess, with what you eat and how you move.
Yeah, balance. You know, balance and variety, and do what you enjoy also, because then it doesn't feel like exercise, it just feels like swimming, right? You said you love swimming. So, you know, if you love swimming, you're not like, okay, I'm going to go swimming now. It's like, oh, I'm going to go swimming now. Yay. So, or...
Exactly.
And when you do what you love, it doesn't feel like an obligation. It feels more joyful and good.
I found that I spend as much time looking forward to the workout, and it hurts in a good way. It's not, you know, ridiculous. And I spend as much time kind of patting myself on the back and having the nice endorphin bath, if you will, following. So a half an hour will be an hour and a half of goodness. It probably extends beyond that.
Well, I hope that you are inspiring yourself and everybody listening, right? That not only are you doing something that's good for you, but you're feeling good about yourself and then feeling good after you do it.
And it doesn't involve chewing and swallowing, even vegetables. it all works. And there you have it.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you are, you sound like you're in maybe a better place than when you called me a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was pretty dark, and I know that it's like a roller coaster. What goes down must come up, and when I'm on the down part, pulling those G's, so to speak, I always forget that. So, you know, it's all good.
Well, when things are good, you forget that they may be not good. But then when they're not good or bad, you forget they can be good again. And they will be good and good again.
Yeah. It's narrow. You call it black and white thinking, but I only see with blinders that day. And if it's a good day, it's not like mania or bipolar high or whatever. But, you know, I fail to see that there will be dips in the roller coaster. I wish I were on a merry-go-round, but... And conversely, as I said, when it's down, it seems to be forever, and that's just limited thinking.
Well, but the good news is we have brain plasticity, the new fancy term for, you know, you can learn new ways of thinking. You can learn new ways of thinking that then will become more automatic. Right now, the automatic thinking, which you are actively challenging, which is going to make it less automatic, is, oh, you know, everything's terrible and dark and this is how it's going to be and I'm screwed. Something along those lines, I'm guessing.
And that's, you know, go ahead, sorry.
Eventually, the automatic thinking will be, okay, things feel dark right now, but you know what? This is temporary. It's going to get better.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect segue. Well, I can talk about this for 2 hours, but, you know, whatever. A book I just read called How to Change... Can I mention a book?
Yes, of course. Of course.
How to Change Your Mind, the bestseller by Michael Pollan, talks about, in 400 pages, the blend and all the studies of psychotherapy and psychedelics. And... It's unbelievable. People who are resistant to change, people who have a lot of insight, people who are stuck in a rut and have an inability or a deep refusal to process that. They found many, many times people who have one trip with a good therapist who's been trained, it's a quantum leap. So I'm actually investigating that myself, but any therapist or anyone who's ever tripped or anybody else, I don't get any kickback from this from the author, but it's called How to Change Your Mind. Very highly recommended. It can help, like I say, it's mind expanding, and it can help deal with the narrow beliefs that you were talking about.
Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate you sharing anything that has been helpful to you and maybe helpful to others. So How to Change Your Mind by
Michael Pollan, P-O-L-L, P as in Paul, O-L-L-A-N.
Pollan. Thank you.
And he actually took some of his own trips on three different drugs and his writing is eloquent. The research is spectacular, and it's I think I'm going to buy the thing.
Is this where he talks about microdosing?
He doesn't talk about microdosing, but he deals with end-of-life anxiety, depression, and addiction. Mm. And these are studies that are being done and accepted by like Yale, past heads of the health department, federal health department. I'm drawing a blank now, but mainstream medicine is really jumping on this. And it's only a matter of time before funding explodes. It already is. But the stories he talks about, people who have been really, really unhappy for decades, who understand what's going on, they come out of it and they're weeping with insight, and they don't go back. It's really a good read.
Yes, when change is, when you actually change, it's not temporary. When you really mm-hmm. change the way you think and believe, it, you don't go back. So
and he says that he argues, he says that the perception is chemically induced, but everything we have is perception. If I have too much cake, I get a buzz and I get foggy. This is the exact same thing. And when it's done correctly, I can't speak too highly of this book. It's really good.
Well, I will check it out. Thank you for the recommendation.
Okay. You got it. Okay.
And I'm glad to hear that you're doing better.
Yeah, yeah. Appreciate that. Thanks for all your help, and keep on keeping on yourself.
I shall. Talk to you next week.
Okay, will do. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Oh, I'm glad he's feeling better. Last time he called, I was a little worried about him, a lot worried about him, but... if you listen to the show regularly, then I guess you can see, because Larry calls in so often, the good, then you can see that, you can hear the roller coaster, and remember in your own life that things vary, but ultimately nothing stays bad, nothing stays good either, right? It's just, there's a combination of both at any given time. And it's what you want to, what you focus on, that creates how you feel. Okay, just really quickly, I think I can get a couple more of these in. this is for all you paleo people out there on about protein. So, although protein can help you feel full and build lean, calorie-burning muscle, it is possible to have too much of a good thing. Overdoing protein can mess up your weight loss journey, because consuming too much of any nutrients when your body doesn't need it leads to excess calories being stored as fat. So a study published in the journal Clinical Nutrition showed that people who ate high protein diets had a 90% higher risk of gaining weight, gaining more than 10% of their body weight, actually, in comparison to those who ate less protein. There's actually a formula for how much protein to eat a day for weight loss. So in order to gain muscle for athletes and lose weight, it's recommended that they, this is in kilograms, so 1.2 to 1.7 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. So a 150-pound person needs about 81 to 115 grams, while someone who's 180 pounds needs 97 to 138 grams of protein. So if you're less active or you're not looking to build muscle, the numbers could be less, around 50 grams total a day. So I don't know what you think of it, what resonates with you, what doesn't. We only have a little bit of time before the show's over, so I'm going to probably leave it at that, because I think that's the last tip. I finished. Yes. Next week we have Dr. Adrian Udim joining us again. For those of you who heard the show before, she is the head of a weight loss center in Beverly Hills, and is incredibly knowledgeable. She's also on the staff at UCLA, I believe, and she's very knowledgeable about the medical side of weight loss. So if you have any questions, be sure to tune in next week for my conversation with Dr. Udim. If you want to send me any questions for me to ask her, feel free to either message me on Instagram or email me through my website, winthedietwar.com. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio. And I will see you guys next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.